You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Today on the Zabecast, when a barrel of crude oil is less than a pint of ice cream, that's bad. The NFL held a mock draft on Monday, and, well, there was some issues. Ron Thomas joins me. We're going to talk basketball and the epic Last Dance miniseries, episodes 1 and 2. All that plus who knew shell collecting was so serious. Your daily Kickstarter of Uncensored Me is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go!
Here we go!
Tuesday, April 21st, 2020. Thank you for joining me.
Behold, Simi, life, real life, a thing that we have been denied for far too long. Good morning, my neighbors!
Hey, fuck you!
Yes! Yes! Fuck you, too!
Yes, indeed. I am your apocalypse optimist, somebody who knows it's all going to shit, but I still think it's going to turn out okay in the end. Day 41 of No Sports Mageddon Apocalypse, and we are digging into the NFL draft this week. We are savoring the Jordan documentary. More on that with Ronnie T in just a second. And there's stuff that is still going to crop up along the way. By the way, parts of the country are beginning to awaken from their coronavirus-induced coma. And we'll see how it works out. A lot of people not real happy about it. I never knew there were so many absolutely credentialed epidemiologists on Twitter who apparently had given up their job as an epidemiologist to then become a journalist or a talk show host or a blogger or a sports guy. Hey, shut up. I don't know what's going to happen. But I know this, there's a lot of people mad at places like Georgia and Alabama and Tennessee and Ohio and Texas that are going to start opening up and restricting or opening up and starting to rescind some of the restrictions. I mean, at some point, like I said, you can't hold your breath underwater waiting for the bees to leave. Forever at some point. But anyway, I just, again, with the vaccines, I saw a quote from Cuomo in New York. It's over when there's a vaccine. Holy shit, you people. That's not how it works. And Novak Djokovic was asked about, you know, would you take a vaccine if you had to in order to compete? And he's like, no, I don't think I would. And immediately, Djokovic is an anti-vaxxer. That is just amazing that it goes that quickly to he's an anti-vaxxer. And I'm not saying that all vaccines are bad or whatever, but they do cause problems. I mean, read up on it, people. It's all I'm saying. But, you know, we're in an age when somebody's opinion or their stance on things is always going to be distorted and people are going to clobber them over the head with it. And this whole thing that drives me nuts, too, about we're going to be led by the science. Science! I feel like the song Blinded Me with Science by Thomas Dolby. Science! Science! In fact, I think the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, tweeted that we will be led by the science, and he capitalized science. Problem is, this is a civics question on when and how and where and why to open up the country again and the states again. It's a political leadership question. You have to say, yes, thank you, doctors, thank you, scientists, thank you, modelers. We have taken all of your data and your input, and we are now, as elected leaders, going to have to huddle up and make a decision, a compromise, a calculated trade-off. How much of this at the price of how much of that? There's just no blindly following the science. Besides, the science is contradictory. There are other scientific models, essays, theories, strategies that you could say, well, this guy says this. How much are we willing to do and at what price? What chances do we have of screwing it up versus the odds we're maybe doing way more harm than good? I don't know. That's a political decision. And that's how society works. Bowing to science is just as dumb as bowing to God. It's the left's version of God. As much as I hate these preachers, I don't care. We're going to convene because of the God has providence over us. We're going to have church service. I think multiple preachers, or at least one in Virginia, died after having a service in the middle of a pandemic. It's stupid. But bowing to science, all caps, it's the same thing, only on the left. God, science. Science is messy, it's evolving, it's inherently uncertain, has a lot of conflict in it. And you got to keep on grinding at it. You're anti-science, Zabe. No, I'm pro-science, but people that are like, well, you got to listen to the science. What does the science say? Science says it's this, absolutely this. Oh, really? For sure? You sure that it's not going to change or evolve, or that there's other competing theories? How do you feel about that? Somebody put out a Venn diagram, circles. Those taking coronavirus seriously, circle. Those concerned about the economic devastation, circle. And those concerned about personal liberty, circle. And in the middle of the three circles, somebody put me. And I'm like, yep, I would like to be considered in the middle as well. Facebook is banning protest groups from organizing online. Fucking Facebook. Why are you people on that weirdo's website? I know, it's convenient to organize. It's good. Everyone's on there. You can find people. You can get together, bake clubs. People rely on their business on Facebook. I get it. But holy shit, Batman. Talk about a dystopian Orwellian future right here in front of your face. Drones in the sky from China, Facebook banning protests and protest groups. Good news is the price of oil is free. I mean, I guess that's good. It's probably not good news, actually. It's probably holy shit news. I don't know. I'm not an oil trader. I know this. I used to be very shit scared of so-called peak oil. I had read up on it, and I'm like, wow, God, that makes total sense. Holy fuck. We're running out of oil. What happens when we suddenly run out of oil? We got nothing else to power all the shit we're doing in society. Oh, my God, this is going to suck. And this was, by the way, right after I bought this house way out in the country. I'm thinking of all the money I spent driving back and forth out here to the house when I used to commute into work. I'm like, what have I done? Well, funny how that turned out. We're starting to get oil from shale fields. We're starting to find it in other places. And we are as far from peak oil in my lifetime as I'll probably ever be. Speaking of oil, somebody had a meme of the Beverly Hillbillies where Jed Clampett shoots his gun and the oil gushes out of the ground. They said, oh boy, this is going to cost me a fortune. Bundesliga soccer starts May 9th. Yes, I'm in. I'm buying a Bayern Munich shirt or kit, and I'm calling DirecTV saying, hello, do you cover German, do you carry German soccer? Also, Danish soccer club FC Midtjylland announced plans that would allow 2,000 cars to park around their stadium and watch matches from giant screens on the top edge of the stadium. Some 10,000 fans could be present, and the team would make the TV commentary available in cars via radio. That's pretty cool. We don't really have those big screen, jumbo screens pointing out in America, but maybe we can make them. I don't know. I'm sure some Karen would complain. On the NFL front, they held a mock draft to see how this thing was going to go. Apparently, there was glitches from the first pick with the Bengals. Also, some GMs on the 32-team conference call didn't know how to mute their mic, and so therefore, it was a complete clusterfuck, according to those, according to sources from certain reporters around the NFL. One GM apparently had his internet go out when he was trying to do this mock draft because his kids were all over their iPads. You damn kids! Could be fun on Thursday, so buckle up. Okay, time now for my man, Ron Thomas. Let me make sure and see if I can sync up. There we go. Ding, ding, ding. Boom. Dun, 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 dun. Oh,
hello,
sorry.
Steven.
Runny boy!
Are you playing my Dave Matthews?
Here it is. About to get real. This is a very westernized subbeat right here. This is used in a lot of, you know, kind of trail songs, but I like it. I like the way it's done.
Good. Well, you're a former drummer. You know all about percussions and whatnot.
I know a little bit. I know enough to be dangerous. That's for damn sure. So, let's start with this. How you been, Ronnie? Yep. How's your golf? You're crossing into the Commonwealth, where they have mercifully kept the golf courses open during this to play. Where have you been playing?
I've been playing at Stonewall. I'm actually playing there today as this airs, Tuesday. That'll be my third time over there. I've played Raspberry Falls, which was in surprisingly good condition. That is a neat golf course up in the mountains. Kind of, well, not up in the mountains, but in the foothills.
Climb up into the foothills of the Blue Ridge. It's a Gary Player layout. It's got some great holes. It's a development course, so there's houses all around.
Yeah,
but it's also pretty tricky. Glad to hear it's in good shape. It has had some years in which you can tell,
right,
the maintenance budget has slipped.
But you know, at this point, you're just happy to be playing, and it's very enjoyable, regardless of how you play, where you're playing. You're just happy to be out there.
Can't you play closer to Maryland? I mean, you're coming deep. I don't mind you, by the way.
But you know what, Steve? I love to go deep, and I'll tell you why I've been doing this. Because I've been in, you know, being in the medical industry, I've been delivering a lot of masks. Which, by the way, for your listeners, I just took a shipment of masks. So if anybody wants to reach out to me for their business, I'm not doing onesies and twosies, but, you know, I can do a case, a thousand of the KN95 masks. So I'll get that out of the way. But I've been driving up to Baltimore, heading over to Frederick, and I'll be damned if I don't love that Route 15 drive from Frederick down into Northern Virginia, crossing the Potomac.
It's nice.
And, oh, my God, it's beautiful. And I didn't realize you drive right into Loudoun County. And I've now done it 3 times in the last 2 weeks. And I love it, Steve. You know how much I love history.
Yeah.
And, you know, you drive right through Civil War battlefields and just beautiful plantations, which are now, for the most part, they are wineries.
A lot of breweries out here for sure.
Yes. Well. And I've played Westfields a couple times. Good. And Pleasant Valley. So I just, you know, we're making the best of it. thing that's a little hurtful is I'm still paying my country club dues, which is fine.
And it's closed.
And I'm not at a haughty-taughty country club. It's a very reasonably priced club. But you go over and you play in Virginia six, seven, eight times now at about 70 to 80 a clip, and it kind of adds up a little bit.
It does add up. But, hey, it'll all get back up and running here, so we just got to be patient. Yeah. Let's turn to the Jordan documentary. Give me your first blush thoughts as you watched it last night.
My first thoughts are I can't wait till next Sunday because I enjoyed it that much.
Agreed.
I think it's incredibly well done. I don't know if you looked – I'm a credit guy. I like to look at the credits. And there are about nine executive producers, one of which is Curtis Polk, who is a University of Maryland graduate. And he was David Falk's right-hand man at SFX. And he's a producer now. He produced the wonderful film Space Jams, I'm sure.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with Space Jam. A lot of Space Jam jokes based off of this because many kids of a younger generation only know Jordan from that movie.
It's exactly right. So he now runs Michael Jordan's business empire, but he's one of the executive producers. I thought it was very well done. I loved how they mixed in the 97-98 season where the NBA, you know, had the film crew follow him. Or was that 96-97? 97-98, I think.
97-98.
Okay, yeah.
Here's the thing that overjoyed me the most. When I heard about this project, I'm like, okay, it'll be, you know, a moment-by-moment journey through The Last Dance, through that season, en route to the sixth and final championship. That's great. I can't wait. What I had no idea, and I thought they might have a few little snippets of Jordan past years or college or whatever. Oh, no. They're using this season as essentially scaffolding to build what is essentially going to be a 10-part monument, a shrine to Michael Jordan and his basketball career, and I couldn't be more overjoyed by that.
Yeah, and I think it's great how they're bouncing back and forth. They're using that timeline, like the old radio dial moving on the timeline. It's incredible. And, Steve, they are not and you know, Jordan, you know this. He said initially when this was coming out or recently, he said, it's not going to make me look very good. Well, it makes me like him fucking even more.
I know
that he didn't pull anything out of it.
He's so real. Like, there's something so grounded about him. Like, when he was shown his sweet mother reading one of his college letters and saying, send money and I need more stamps. Jordan laughs in a way and smiles in a way that is so genuine and so normal. It's awesome.
It is awesome. And there's so many parts of it. We don't have enough time to get into it.
We got plenty of time. Let's not rush.
All right. Well, I did make some notes here, and I'll go right down what I have, and then you can fire in whenever you want. Initially winning five championships in 7 years, in that day and age, Steve, when there weren't super teams, you know, he's playing with Luke Longley and the Paxson boys and Kerr and these guys. And to Bill win Wennington. 5-7 when you don't have the Garnett or the, you know, you don't have the Kevin Durant and these guys Pippen. Together.
Yeah, he had Pippen and he had serviceable guys.
BJ Armstrong.
Right. Craig Hodges going back further.
Yes. Yes. All right. So that was an incredible accomplishment. Much more so incredible more so than if a team did it now. And then especially back then, as you know, players went where they were drafted or where they were traded. There was no demanding, except we did learn that Pippen tried to demand the trade, and they left it off there.
First of all, I didn't understand that. He knew he was going into the last year of his deal, and he knew this was the last season. So why demand a trade in the middle of the year?
Right.
Maybe it's just his way of finally throwing a fit and basically fucking everything up for everybody because he was mad about it. And
well, we know that human nature dictates that if you do not feel appreciated, the way you're going to act and the way you're going to behave and what you're going to project outwardly without really caring is not good. And you know, it all had to do, it seems like, with Jerry Krause, with his relationship with Krause, when they talked about the way that he was yelling at crowds on the bus. God.
Yeah, right. They're like, shit. Whereas uncomfortable, they're like, man, you got to dial it down, Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus.
Now, before I forget about Krause, again, we're jumping around. I'm going to jump around a lot, but the thing that I think Jordan was concerned about, people not maybe thinking, or it would show him in a good light and maybe him as a prick. I didn't like the way that he made fun of Krause, the short comments.
Really?
That's not cool. Yeah, I don't think that's cool. Hey, Jerry, you gonna join us out here? We're gonna lower the rims,
that's,
you know.
Good,
I don't
natured
think that's shit.
Ball busting. Come on.
Yeah, man. But there's two kinds of ball busting I don't do personally.
Short
I don't
jokes,
make fun of short people fat and jokes. Fat people.
About,
I just don't.
How about ball jokes?
Never. I don't dig that. I don't think it's not there's nothing productive nothing good is going to come out of making fun of someone's height. You know, I don't even make fun of Kurtz.
You just did though, because he's a height challenged American.
Yeah, but you never say anything like that. So
I know. Okay.
The Krause thing was a little bit brutal, but this guy obviously was such a pain in the ass.
Let's talk about appreciation for a second, because up until Jordan's final 2 years, when he got balloon payments of $30 and $33 million, he was making only $3.5 million a year.
I know.
So Pippen was making 2.7. Jordan was making 3.5. And Jordan still understood. This is, to me, the greatest lesson from this whole thing. I'd tell it to my son if I had a son who was watching it with me. And I should probably make my daughter watch it because I'm a bad dad for not doing so.
Okay.
And the point is this. This is the greatest athlete in the world, the most beloved athlete in the world, the biggest, most dominant winner ever. An economic empire is in his fingertips. And his fucking owner and his fucking fat GM are getting ready to wrap it up. They're like, five titles, another one, wrap it up again. When all Jordan ever cared about was winning in sports. And to talk about being unappreciated, that is the ultimate bit of not being appreciated. But here's the thing. And Jordan, when he wasn't happy about Pippen holding out or not getting his surgery earlier, he still said, you know what, though? It's on me. It's on me and my 35-year-old, starting to break down body. I am going to take the challenge, and I'm going to put it on my back because I want to win. I'm going to put up with all this bullshit. I'm going to accept the fact I'm not appreciated because the thing to me is about winning. I love this game and I love winning, and I'm just going to navigate around all the bullshit. The dysfunction of the Bulls organization and the insanity of breaking up a five-time champion and a petty little fat tyrant. I'll make fat jokes.
That's okay. That's all right.
That dysfunction, that amount of unappreciation, I would tell anybody, exists everywhere in life and business. At a high level like professional sports, at a low level like an ice cream shop. And you have to tell yourself, navigate around it to get to what's important to you. And if it's totally not in line with your values and you can leave, then leave. That's a great lesson. Jordan put up with all that bullshit, Ron. And he's like, fuck it. I'm going to win another title because this is my legacy. And eventually I won't be working for Jerry Reinsdorf. And eventually I'll be on my own to do this, that, and the other. So I'm going to put up with it. And he did.
He did put up with it. And, you know, they made it clear from the beginning that Krause had issues. I thought it was neat how they covered all the bases. I thought it was really neat how they touched how they talked about his father and, how he just was never appreciated. And he was just always looking for that appreciation. He went so far as to make that comment as, you know, individuals don't win championships, organizations win championships.
Right.
Just that little sidebar that you always have. But at the same time, he deserves an enormous amount of credit for bringing in Pippen.
Yeah, you and I, when talking via text on Sunday night, where I said to you in a text and to Mr. Ronas, I go, you know what? It just seems like the players back then were more men than the players of today. They're the same chronological age, but they're not infantilized by the social media age we live in. You know, you look at Kevin Durant as a mature adult compared to players of that era. It's not even close. And it's a matter of the product of the age. And also what's a big difference, especially with Jordan, is he had a father who was a good father, worked and was involved in his boy's life. He had a brother that would kick his ass in the backyard on the hoop. By the way, if that's the real Jordan hoop, it's the most sacred basketball hoop in the world.
Yes, it is.
And he had no AAU corrupting influence.
That's so, it. Bingo.
Dad plus brother minus AAU influence with a sprinkle of a setback early in one's career, such as, hey, I got cut from varsity when I was a sophomore and I had to be on the JV team. That's all the combustible elements right there to fuel a guy. And I'm not saying that today's players, just because they'd come from a different, you know, circumstance. Certainly LeBron came from a very different circumstance. No father. He was an AAU product. Didn't go to college. Didn't get coaching from the great Dean Smith. Yeah. You know, totally different. He's still a great player, but Jordan was cut from a different cloth.
Well, how about an Exhibit A for what you were just talking about, the, you know, the kind of player? How many owners nowadays, like Jerry Reinsdorf, would, like he said, like, once that contract is signed, don't come back in. I don't want to see you. Right. I don't want to hear one word. You signed the 7-year, $18 million contract.
Right.
There's no change in it. Well, that's a life lesson.
Yes.
That's what that is right there. All right. Shit. I have to live with my decision and I have to respect that because it's a fucking contract. Remember?
And he was hurt in that final year. So the reason he signed it was because he was afraid of getting hurt. He also had a lot of responsibility back home. The other thing about Pippen is that, you know, you see where he came from and you're like, fuck, Central Arkansas. Nothing against the good people of Central Arkansas, but that is some real flyover country poverty right there. People are just trying to make it by. And he was at an NAIA school and he began as a student manager.
Yeah, it was the equipment manager. That's Central Arkansas.
Out of here.
12 kids. His dad has a stroke at the dinner table. His brother walks into high school, and there's a wrestling match, and one of the wrestlers puts him in some kind of move and paralyzes him.
Two people in the house.
And he said
In wheelchairs.
Up.
And how many kids? How many brothers did he have? Like
12. There were 12 kids.
12. Yes. 12 kids, two people in wheelchairs.
And he said that I had to take the guaranteed money because I had a lot of responsibility back home. So that's why he signed that contract.
Right.
So a few of the other things that jumped out at me, Sam Bowie being picked number two by Portland over Michael Jordan is just hilarious.
Well, also, too, on that, how crazy was it that Rod Thorne appeared in that clip basically apologizing for Jordan by saying, well, we wish he was 7'1".
Yes.
That's fucking crazy.
I know.
Because and as I said on my show, I said that's because the league back then was a Mastodon's league. Gotta get a big man.
Yeah.
And to think that the Celtics were this incredible team, that 86 Celtics team was one of the great teams of all time. But look at the lumbering Mastodons up front. 7-foot Robert Parrish, slow as a sundial. Yes. McHale, not much better. Lurch, you know, 6'11". Bird at 6'9", playing quote-unquote small forward.
Yes.
And then they're DJ and Ainge, that's a good enough backcourt.
Cornbread Maxwell.
That's right.
And don't forget about the guy coming off the bench, Greg Kite. Nothing. I mean, just no talent, but big.
So
when, foul the shit out of someone if you needed him to.
Right. So when a guy like Rick Carlisle is trying to guard Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
And the announcer says, Carlisle just wants his mommy. And there's this look in Carlisle's face, like a 1,000-yard stare of, holy shit, what am I doing?
And we left off Bill Walton. How about Bill Walton gets pissed off at DJ?
Right.
Why am I guarding this guy? He makes me look like an idiot. He found out.
Look at all the creaky mastodons on that team with Walton off the bench as well. So that was the mindset of the league.
Quinn Buckner.
Clyde Frazier saying, well, you know, Michael's got to understand. He's only 6'6". He's not going to dominate the way, you know. And it's like, yeah, you don't know. He's going to change the fucking league. And he sure enough did. And to see the highlights, the montage of him against the Celtics in game two. was set to the music of, oh shit, I'm so bad at this. Now I got to look at my phone.
I don't remember.
It's epic. I mean, it was just epic. And the other thing I didn't know was the golf match with Ainge.
Yeah.
Between games one and two. Did you know about that?
I didn't know anything about it. That's why I sent you that link.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that golf link. It didn't mention it in there, but
LL,
yeah, I had no
LL
idea.
Cool J, I'm Bad.
Oh, okay.
That was the song that they used. And I had forgotten, by the way, how many jumpers Jordan hit while floating.
He had 63 points, Steve.
Okay. 63 points. And do you know how many threes he shot?
Maybe one.
Zero.
Yeah, there you go.
Zero. Yep. And he shot 22 of 41 from the field, which means he shot better than 50% on that kind of volume shooting when they knew, holy shit, guard this guy.
Yeah. I wonder, and you've got to wonder how many calls Boston got in that shithole.
Or
that
how many no calls that, you know, Jordan gets knocked, well,
exactly,
and Jordan gets bumped,
exactly,
and they're like, nah, play on. He still did shoot 19 free throws, but still. And the fact that the golf match in which Jordan played like shit and Ainge just wouldn't stop running his mouth, which sounds exactly like a Danny Ainge kind of thing to do.
Yes.
Ended with Jordan saying, and tell your guy DJ tomorrow, I got a little something for him.
Yeah. And they had video of it. And
yes!
I mean, if that was the real video, like, how the hell did you get that video?
Who takes video of that? Who takes video of Jordan washing his warm-ups with the Bulls logos on him? Was that the protocol of the day? All right, here's your warm-ups. Make sure to keep them washed.
Well,
bring them to the game.
That brings us to something that is the most, probably the best part for me, or the most impactful thing for me, was when he talked about being a rookie, and when they were in Peoria, Illinois, playing the preseason game, and he went looking for the players, and he knocked, knock, 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 and he said, he heard him inside. They said, shh, 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 who is it? He said, it's MJ. And they said, oh, fuck him. Oh, fuck. He's just a rookie. Yeah. Let him in. And he said he walked in and he saw lines. He saw Wade and he saw girls. And he said, I'm out. I don't want anything to do with this. Well, that's when I grabbed my son. And I said, Winston, because he was kind of watching, but he was on his iPad as usual.
Right.
I said, Winston, turn that shit off. I said, watch this. And I used it as a life lesson, as a teaching lesson. I said, Winston, if you don't have to hang out. You don't have to stay. If there's shit going on when you're somewhere at a party or wherever you are and you don't like what's going on.
Bounce.
I said, look at what this guy did. Look at what he did. He left. Winston said, I said, do you understand? He said, yes, I do, Pop. And that's, you know.
That's, I mean, good.
It is. And he went home, and the next scene was he said, from then on, I was on my own. That's when they showed him in the apartment. He had like a condo. He's washing his clothes.
It's so amazing how quickly. I mean, he had been in the league a month and a half, maybe, and he's on the cover of SI. A Star Is Born.
And they showed game three of his rookie season. I thought it was great. They said, Steve, they couldn't have covered more bases. They made sure to show you what the hell the
footage,
you know, when they talk about
Bucks,
and when
the
they talk
Bucks
about
game.
an indoor soccer team was outselling them.
Yes,
in terms of crowd.
By the way, that was not an exaggeration, because I talked to the guy who does the Bulls play by play now, and of course I've got end of day brain here, so it's going to come to me
right,
in just
that's
a second.
All right.
But he was the voice of the indoor soccer team. I go, is that true, or is that just sort of a fanciful embellishment? And he said, nope, definitely a Chuck Swirsky. Chuck Swirsky, who is the current voice of the Bulls, he covered the team back during the Jordan era, and he called the soccer team. The soccer team was outdrawing the Bulls because they were, as David Aldridge said, a joke.
Yes.
They were a drug-addled joke of a team.
Cocaine circus, they called it.
The
Did you see him laugh when they said that shit? He loved it. He wasn't ready for it. Which shows me that he was not ready. He didn't know any of the questions that were coming. A lot of pricks with his stature and status
like,
would be like,
you tell
right,
me what you're asking.
Send me these fucking pictures. Send me these questions. I'll look them over and then we'll get back to you. Nope. Cocaine circus. He started laughing his ass off.
Circus, right. I love how one of the Twitter follows that I follow for the NBA said the biggest L's taken last night, you know, Krause was one.
Yeah.
Another one was every member of that 83-84 Bulls team that had kept it together all these years about that hotel room in Peoria. Yep.
It was out.
It's out now. Somebody else joked, like, yeah, I bet they're all sitting at home watching the documentary of their family going, yeah, no, that really didn't happen. That story is...
Yeah, I wasn't in Peoria. No. So the game three that they showed where he went nuts when they were down going into the fourth, and I loved how they said, I keep saying I loved, but I did.
And they were all ready to quit because that's what they did.
What he said is we're down six or nine going into fourth, and he said they're ready to fucking pack it in. And he said, no, we can win it. But the crowd reaction when he started going off in the fourth, the one dude down on the baseline ran around and stuck his head around the basketball support, the padding, and started banging on the padding. He's like up on the court.
I didn't see that.
Oh, it was fucking great.
I got to go rewatch
that.
It was
like the butt cut and the plaid shirt and the corduroys, some dude going nuts. And you know he's a diehard if he's at the game in the first place.
Right. The thing is, the whole story of everything and all the people involved is it's so good. People say, oh, they should do a documentary about this team or that team or whatever. You're never going to get the kind of crazy story this really was with this mix of personalities, because they're going to use, like, episode two is about Pippen. All right. Episode one was to set things up. Episode two is about Pippen. One of the episodes will be about Phil. Another episode's going to be about Rodman for sure, because that was a real gamble to bring him in. Because he was a wild card, and he was phenomenal as a component on the team. And so they're going to go through all the different components. But here, this is the best summary that I think I've seen on the web, and that is Warren Sharp on Twitter said, a baseball scout called the Bulls owner and asked if he could be their GM. He got the job. He assembled a team that won six titles in 8 years. His best players hated him. His coach despised him. He dismantled everything and then finished dead last the next 4 years. His city still hates him. You can't write a story like that. You can't create a character that looks like good old Crumbs Krause.
So do you think that Jerry Krause did that as if to say, fuck you?
No.
You know, look at what I did. I didn't get any shit. Or do you think he did it? Is it the opposite, saying, I'll show you that I know what I'm doing and I can start from scratch and rebuild and win again, and you'll see that I'm really that good?
Yeah, he wanted to do that. That's because he was just – and he made so many good calls to go get Pippen and trade up with the Sonics to make sure to land him, bring in Phil Jackson to Chicago in the first place when they were floundering with Collins and Stan Albeck and others. And then, of course –
Cartwright
for Oakley thing was – huge and controversial at the time, and Jordan didn't like it. So there was a lot of good things that Krause did, but he just couldn't dial it back a bit and let others bask in the glow of what he had set up.
Yes. Well, a couple other things
Floyd. God, did he?
Yeah, Tim Floyd. It was weird. Someone he could push around, probably, or who knows? You don't know what a guy like that.
He's his fishing buddy, basically.
Yeah. The 85 dunk contest in Indianapolis, Indiana, I was at, and I will never forget it. I have the ticket stub. I was at the All-Star game too, but Michael Jordan, Dominique ultimately won. Drexler, Dr. J, I'll never forget it.
That's when Jordan's flew. Rookie year.
He flew from the foul line.
That's his rookie year or his second year?
He was drafted in 84, so it would have been
his rookie year.
Yeah, his rookie year.
Was he wearing
in February?
And he was wearing the script Chicago jersey.
I'm not sure. The gold necklace, and
but it was hair. It was hair Jordan, meaning he had hair at the time.
Yeah, he did. Not very much, but I'll never forget it was packed. It was at Market Square Arena, and I will never forget that All-Star game alone. You need to pull up.
Yes, it was. I'm looking at
the roster.
It was tight. It was tight shorts, Jordan. And that's the one where he does a dunk. And
he flew from half court. He's like with the ball tucked. He's almost parallel to the ground. His chest is out. And that's the one he took off from the foul line.
I think that was the next year.
Was it?
I'm not entirely sure because there's the one I'm looking at here. He's got the script Chicago jersey. He's got gold chains and he's got hair. And yeah. he did a dunk in which his eyes are basically looking at the rim.
Yeah, that was the windmill on the side.
He's cupping the ball in his palm, and he's about to side mill it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
There's the lineups are incredible. From Sidney Moncrief on the West, you know, it was Alex English. I mean, that kind of stuff.
86, he wasn't in it because he was hurt.
Okay.
That was the Spud Webb one. Okay.
Right.
So we would go to 87, and I think that's 87 is the one where Jordan is flying with his legs kicked out behind him. It's also the one where he goes diagonal. And at that point, his jersey said Bulls on the front. They had modernized their jersey just a bit.
Gotcha.
He did not have gold chains. He had a tighter crop on his hair. And that is the one, 87, which blew people's minds.
Yep. How about the theme song, the introductory song for them? Alan Parsons Project.
Yeah.
It's called Sirius, which is the lead up to Eye in the Sky. That's so perfect. I wonder if someone else had used that beforehand. But that will always be the Chicago Bulls theme song, if you will.
Oh, and it's perfect. And now, as the announcer hypes it up, it literally just transports you back in time and gives you goosebumps. It's good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And the golf stuff, I thought it was cool how they touched on it. They didn't quite go into enough of it. They probably will. But, you know, he at Carolina, the story is amazing. He was roommates with Buzz Peterson, who was on the team, who was actually the player of the year in North Carolina high school basketball.
Right.
And Buzz, yeah, there you go.
It's
called
Lights
Sirius.
Are dimmed. I think this was one of the first big elaborate introduction protocols in the NBA.
Well, it definitely was. Definitely.
And other arenas fell in line, but nobody dared to use in the NBA the same song, you know, because that'd be like really cheesy.
Yeah, you can't. But who would have thought a British band from, you know, Alan Parsons Project would have that?
Go figure. Anyway,
when writing it.
You were saying while I interrupted you.
That's all right. He his roommate was Buzz Peterson, and Buzz Peterson was friends with Davis Love.
That's right.
And yeah, and
he got him
Davis
in the golf.
Love. Yeah, well, Davis Love comes over to their room one night or one day, and he's like, "Yeah, Buzz and I are going to go hit some balls." And Jordan was like, "Sure, I'll come over. You got to read this article I sent you; it's really good. Maybe you can put it on.
I will
on I Twitter."
Will.
But so and they fell in love with the game immediately
because it's the greatest game ever invented.
It is. And $93 million he made in 15 years, Steve.
That's on the court.
$90 million on the court. $100 million he still makes, $100 million plus from Nike. You tell me a player after playing in the league. LeBron ain't making $100 million. Well, shit.
Yeah, he is. The money is different now. By the way,
I'm saying after. I'm saying this far after his career. Will he still be making $100 million a year?
LeBron
will.
Yeah. No, LeBron will. LeBron's very shrewd at making money. He knows how to leverage himself.
From Nike. This is $100 million from Nike, from his Jordan brand, each year.
Yeah. How about the fact that Patrick Ewing was wearing a Jordan Jumpman logo on the shirt while being interviewed in a documentary about the guy that ripped his heart out time after time when the two played together?
So the interesting thing is going to be they have to talk about the failure, we'll call it. I may have to call it a failure when he came to the Wizards. We'll wait and we can talk about that another time. But
maybe they'll delve nightmare. Into that. I wouldn't mind if they just dropped it and didn't bring it up at all.
But it's coming up.
And I wonder about how much are they going to get into the Richard Esquinas gambling thing and his departure to go play baseball for a year and a half.
Yeah. Well, did you have that guy on? I didn't listen.
No, not yet. I'm going to have him on later this week. We'll talk to my guy.
Okay, good.
That. All right, Ronnie, Godspeed, right, my friend. Great to talk to you, and we'll chat next week.
You got it, Steve. Right. See ya.
All right, we'll end on a couple of quick stories here. Apparently, the Ryder Cup and the PGA of America is considering a fanless Ryder Cup this fall at Whistling Straits. I don't even know why that's on the table, because the Ryder Cup without fans is not the Ryder Cup. It just isn't. To me, there's no point in playing it. Oh, but what about the TV money? Can you not just postpone it a year? It just makes no sense to me. But they're the ones that, I don't know. Maybe they're getting people going, hey, man, might not be fans next year either. This thing might go for a year, 2 years. We'll never have fans back at sporting events. Anyway, Tim Fincham is being inducted to the Golf Hall of Fame. I don't think he belongs. You know what? He made a lot of money for a lot of guys. He's just a corporate suit. To think that you want to reserve Hall of Fames for the true, you know, legends of a sport, preferably players and not administrators, I don't think Tim Fincham belongs. The skateboarders are reclaiming their skate parks in California just a day or two after the city bulldozed a bunch of sand into them. They brought shovels and buckets and brooms, and they're already cleaning it out. That's pretty damn funny. And then finally, who knew that picking up seashells to put in a jar was such serious business? Apparently, the beaches of the Outer Banks are being overrun with seashells because of the lack of visitors during the coronavirus shutdown. Saw a photo of all the shells basically covering the beach. You won't be able to walk. And it makes perfect sense. Millions, hundreds of thousands, and maybe millions plus walk up and down the beaches, and they collect seashells. They use them in arts and crafts. And if nobody's going to be there to pick them up, they're going to pile up pretty quick. All right, that'll do it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. Tell a couple friends if they like good podcasts that talk about sports, life, and more. Remember to subscribe to Fridays. You got to do it by getting the Zabecast app, which is free. Get the Zabecast app. It's free. You can then subscribe to Fridays through the app. Only $5 a month, 16 cents a day. And then you get 5 glorious days of me, not just 4. Tell a couple friends, have a great Tuesday, and we will see you tomorrow.